Thank you for joining us for Care No Matter What, the Planned Parenthood Arizona podcast. And now, your host, Ethan Cox, Director of Development.
Thank you so much for joining us for the Planned Parenthood Arizona Care No Matter What podcast. We have another great guest and another great topic for you today. We're going to be talking about disparities in healthcare for people of color with Dr. Cassandra Peel. I'm first going to start off with a short introduction of Dr. Peel, and then we'll launch into it. Dr. Peel is the Program Director, Administrative Faculty for the Online MSW Program in the School of Cultural and Family Psychology at Pacific Oaks College. A Brooklyn native, Dr. Peel completed her doctorate at University of Arizona in 2019 with an emphasis on the socio-emotional development of healthcare workers and the intersection of disability, health disparities, and aging. Dr. Peel has taught and held leadership positions at the Claremont Colleges, University of Arizona, and Arizona State University. She has created award-winning civic engagement programs, developing innovative field placements at hospitals, hospice, ambulatory clinics, rehabilitation centers, and nonprofits. She recently has been chosen as a recipient of Tucson's 40 Under 40 Award for 2020. And Dr. Peel is a consulting editor for the Health and Social Work Journal, volunteers at Planned Parenthood Arizona, and is a board member at the Rito Bend Neighborhood Association. After working in radio and volunteering at Downtown Radio Tucson, she co-founded an online radio station, Rarity Rock Radio, with her husband, Michael. They live in Tucson with their dog, Jesse. Welcome, Dr. Peel.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so great to have you with us today.
I
want to start out by talking to you about one of your scholarly interests, which is the socio-emotional development of healthcare workers, particularly their level of preparedness to work with vulnerable populations. So that's a mouthful for me, but can you talk a little bit more about this?
Sure, that is correct. The emotional fluency of physicians and healthcare providers directly impacts patients' diagnoses, experiences, their treatment, and their overall well-being. The socio-emotional language of medicine is a term that I have coined to describe the non-clinical language of medicine spoken by physicians and healthcare workers that promotes human connection between the patient and the providers and stems from a well-developed humanistic understanding of compassion, of empathy, and an awareness of the social problems that plague our society. Oftentimes, medical training programs emphasize clinical communication and teach students how to speak like a provider with regard to taking patient histories and communicating disease pathways and complex treatment plans. The issue is that once they graduate and are actually seeing patients, they will need to know how to navigate a spectrum of scenarios and conversations based upon the language, impressions, and modeling they learned from their mentors and peers. Are they prepared? Some are, and they do wonderful work, but that is more the exception than the rule. We really need clinicians to meet the patient where they're at, and that takes time. And understanding our health disparities, access to quality care, and an active acknowledgement of systemic racism in medicine. We're in the middle of the largest public health crisis in a century, and healthcare workers are being traumatized repeatedly while also facing occupational hazards daily. It's not a great time to be oriented to medicine. With everyone in disaster mode, there isn't room for the type of mentorship that is needed, especially now.
I think that's really fascinating because I think a lot of us are aware of that, but don't really know how to put it into words. So in a lot of ways, I'd like to just thank you for being able to kind of condense what I know a common feeling is for a lot of us, kind of navigating the healthcare system in America today. It's not necessarily always a pleasant experience.
Of course.
So, you know, recent reports have been showing that women of color are far more likely to die during pregnancy and childbirth than their white counterparts. How can that be? I mean, doctors are dealing with human beings at their essence. So how can the race of a person make a difference in the type of care that they might get?
Thank you for this question. Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related causes than white women, according to the CDC. It's partly why the overall rate of pregnancy-related deaths has climbed over the past 2 decades, making the maternal mortality rate in the United States the worst in any industrialized country. This is a public health and human rights crisis because most of these deaths are preventable. As COVID surges exponentially, this is going to get worse. People that need access for pre-existing conditions and routine health care are likely to experience gaps in their care at this time under an incredibly strained healthcare system. And when I say system, I don't mean beds, I mean the workforce. Also, one of the biggest problems we have is the lack of standardized care across the board. Women of color are undervalued, and it shows in our healthcare system. They are not monitored as carefully and closely as white women are. When they do present with symptoms, they're often dismissed and written off. This goes for pregnancy, this goes for COVID, and any other circumstance. The history of medicine also reflects this and reminds us of this. The issue isn't race, but racism. The systemic problems start with social inequities, differing levels of access to healthy communities, quality food, quality schools, jobs that pay well and have health insurance, reliable access to transit. There is undeniable unconscious bias that is embedded in the medical system affecting quality of care in both apparent and subtle ways. The experience with their medical experts leave many feeling misunderstood, devalued, and disrespected, especially as it relates to their symptoms of pain. Women of color are less believed by their white counterpart patients, causing traumatic stress, and it is leading to very poor outcomes. It's the intersectionality of racism and gender discrimination that leads to our very worst outcomes.
It's so shocking, and I think that that's one of the things that the past year has really shown a lot of us is that these disparities don't just exist in any one part of our culture or environment, but they are really systemic, like you said, throughout. And why would medical care be different from that? So I think that's a great point that you make, that this is something that, you know, we definitely are going to have to tackle from the top to the bottom.
Absolutely.
And the thing is, and I know this as the son of a nurse and the grandson of a nurse and the brother of a nurse, most doctors and nurses are truly engaged with and passionate about delivering the highest quality care to their patients. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Where is the disconnect between their desire and what truly happens when they are working with a person of color?
Thank you for that question. And you know, first and foremost, healthcare professionals must explicitly acknowledge that race and racism factor into healthcare. We must consider the roles of implicit bias and structural racism in creating and perpetuating health disparities in healthcare today. When we talk about implicit bias, we mean these are learned stereotypes and prejudices that operate automatically and unconsciously. While structural racism takes into account the numerous ways that communities foster racial discrimination through the things I mentioned previously, housing, education, etc., we focus on these factors more than interpersonal racism or negative feelings or prejudices that play out between individuals. I wrote about this at length in my dissertation around the types of things that patients were told by their physicians, assumptions that their physicians made based upon their race, around their lifestyle choices, around the foods they ate. And there was a lot of blame. And when the patient feels blamed, they really can't open up to their provider.
Yeah. As someone that's been in that situation personally before, I totally get it. Outside of the internalized racism that exists within our healthcare system, I know there's a certain level of misogyny and women being believed by their doctors far less often than men are. How does that get addressed?
Well, Let's consider this. Women in pain are much more likely than men to receive prescriptions for sedatives for their ailments. One study even showed women who received coronary bypass surgery were only half as likely to be prescribed painkillers as compared to men who underwent the same exact surgery. We experience longer wait times as well. The New England Journal of Medicine found that women are 7 times more likely than men to be misdiagnosed and discharged in the middle of having a heart attack. This is a tragedy. This is because the medical concepts of most diseases have been based and taught on understandings of male physiology and anatomy. And women have altogether different symptoms than men when having a heart attack or other conditions. We have to take that into account. One book that I recommend on this topic is Abby Norman's Ask Me About My Uterus. I think it's a very important book for people to read around pain and understanding the pain of women and how it often goes unheard by their providers.
Yeah, and obviously we all have mothers, sisters, wives that we want to make sure they get the best care possible. And it's nearly unbelievable that the statistics that you just gave, it's horrifying, honestly. Just to change the tone a little bit, what gives you hope on the horizon? Do you believe that true and real progress is being made?
Yes, and I do have hope. Yeah, I think hope is important to hold on to. And there are a lot of really positive things that are going on. I mean, the Biden-Harris administration, coupled with the arrival of a safely proven vaccine for all in 2021, is something that definitely gives me hope. But again, there is still so much to be done, not only in terms of logistics to control the spread of COVID-19, but to disperse the vaccine and to create an effective public health campaign and strategy to convince the public to take the vaccine in terms of proving durability and whether those who are most vulnerable will react well to the vaccine. I'd like more details on the impact and administration of the vaccine regarding women of reproductive age, as well as children and infants. This pandemic is disproportionately impacting people of color, and a vaccine will empower everyone to move forward with their lives. I'm pleased about the COVID task force team the new administration has created, particularly with Dr. Michael Osterholm, who is an epidemiologist and director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, otherwise known as CIDRO, at the University of Minnesota. I listen to his weekly podcast, and he has been pure science and heart from the beginning of COVID. So I've looked forward to his podcast every Thursday night in 2020, and I urge you to have a listen to the latest on where we're headed with the course of this virus.
Yeah, I think that for a lot of us, the new administration is a lot of the hope on the horizon. let's truly, hope and pray that he comes through with all that he said he's going to be able to do. And I do think he will. I think, things are going to turn around, and 2021 is going to look a lot better than 2020. So for my final question, kind of magic wand time, and I know this is tough, but if you were granted one wish that could help to start to address all of these issues, what would it be?
It's such a hard question, because if I truly had a magic wand, there's no limit to what I would do.
Right.
I would say that no one dies because they were ignored or not heard during the course of their medical treatment. That will always be my wish. We need to do more in training healthcare providers to listen and have relationships with their patients, particularly now. This goes against training them to work in big box medicine, where administrative duties such as charting are emphasized. And I understand that clinicians are expected to see a certain volume of patients. I understand all of that, but we need quality too. Otherwise, we're going to inevitably miss something. So that's what my one wish would be.
I like that. And I think that it goes back to something that you mentioned a little earlier, awareness. If we're not able to be aware of and admit that there's an issue, we're never going to start to make any progress. And so I really appreciate you taking some time to talk with us and to talk with supporters of Planned Parenthood Arizona, who are so passionate about these topics. Really appreciate it, and think a great, great conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm very proud to volunteer with Planned Parenthood of Arizona.
Yeah, absolutely. We're proud to have you as a volunteer.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening today. And we will see you next time on the next Planned Parenthood Arizona Care No Matter What podcast. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, please rate and subscribe on iTunes. See you next time.